From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The folks from the Andersons will join us from right here in Champaign County to discuss the cash grain market. We'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, we'll talk about two of the states' number one crops. They're not corn and soybeans, pumpkin and horseradish. We'll do that with Mohammed Babadoust, University of Illinois Horticultural Extension Specialist from right here in Urbana-Champaign on this Monday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers on this Monday afternoon. December corn up 9 1/4 at 346, March at 355 3/4, 9 1/4 higher in the May, up 9 1/4 as well at $3.62 3/4. November beans up 19 cents, $9.73 the settlement price. January at 9.78, up 18 3/4 in the March contract. In the beginning of the quarter, up 19 cents at $9.84 1/2. Also, the first trading day of the month. December wheat futures down 6 1/2 cents at $3.95 1/2. That for the soft red, the July there at 4.41 1/4, down 6 1/4. The hard red July 8 cents lower at 4.44 1/2. Live cattle futures down 12 1/2 cents in the October at $98.77 1/2. November feeders up, or rather down, 22 1/2 cents at $119.42 1/2. And the lean hogs finished the October contract 49.17 1/2, up 15 cents. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
I'm wondering, because we're in the midst of harvest, why it is, especially as we are in the midst of the beginning of harvest, that both corn and soybeans managed to gain pretty nice gains today.
Giddy up. That's what I heard all day today. Giddy up.
Oh, that sounds technical in that case.
Oh, can't wait till Thursday. Hey, a lot of moving parts. It's mainly chart-based buying. It started on Friday. The technical crowd tried to push the market lower, failed, had to buy the way out of it. Funds bought over 16,000 contracts there Friday. They bought another 15,000 contracts today. Anybody that looks at a chart can clearly see the head and shoulders formation in the corn. And even people don't know anything about corn was giddy up and going on corn today, with the idea that this corn market technically is in a position to push up towards the 370 level based on the chart formation. The key is kind of holding the breakout level here and make sure we just don't reverse back down from here. But the technicians were in charge, buying beans, selling wheat, buying corn, selling wheat. A lot of spread activity. Fundamentally, producers just aren't selling a lot of cash grain at the moment. It seems that there's some ample storage this early in the harvest. They're more interested in filling bins first. Also, too, we saw a good export inspections report. Shipped out over 57 million bushels of corn and upwards of 40 million bushels of beans. But you would expect we would have seen a Chinese sale or something a little bit more fundamentally than that. And that's going to be hard to come by this week because China is taking the week off. Not to say something can happen, but China's off this week. And also today was a holiday in Malaysia. So there wasn't a whole lot of strong fundamental news out of there either, Todd.
Looks like it should be a good week for harvest across the Midwest. Do you expect some pressure to come into the marketplace later in the week?
I think it will keep a cap on it. We'll see how the basis unfolds here this afternoon, see if cash market followed the market higher. But I have a feeling, though, additional gains are going to be limited from cash grain move. The idea that producers are pushing the pencil pretty sharply in through here, do I store or do I sell? And when you look at commercial grain storage, investing, say, 20 cents, you know, the market's got to go up another 20 cents to get that back, and that might be kind of, you know, hard to do, whereas the risk to the downside is 20 cents now. So, you know, you put in storage, you got 20 cents in it, the market would have to go down. that's another 20 cents. That's 40 cents right there. And you're in a situation where guys need to move cash grain. We'll probably do so by the end of the week.
That'll put some pressure on the market, I suppose, at some point. However, I want to know one other thing from you. Do you think, given the head and shoulders bottom, potentially, and you mentioned this up front, although not in this terms, that we may have a bottom at least in the corn market for the fall?
It appears that way. It feels that way. When you look at the big picture in through here, the supply-demand reports coming up, we could see a situation where they could start backing off on production yield, so the carryout could start to shrink, you know, somewhat. Technical, you got a broad-based bottom in through here. Talking to end users, they've been chomping at the bit for years and years and years to be able to buy corn $3 or less. So you've got a real strong fundamental support level here at $3 basis the future. So it's supportive. Now, I'm not saying we're going to go up to $3.74 by all means. It suggests we can remain firm in through here. And the thing you got to watch, as been mentioned before, is there's carry in the marketplace. So if December corn sort of goes off here at 340, the March could roll down and so on. So if you're putting grain in the bin, and you look at the July futures out there, I'd look at doing a little hedge or a little protection out there so this carry does not get away from you as we move through the marketing year.
Thanks so much, and we'll look forward to talking to you in another week.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
You too. That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, is not changing his tune regarding the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, and the potential action on it in a lame duck Congress, this despite recent hints of hope by two key chairmen, House Ways and Means Chairman and Texas Republican Kevin Brady, along with Pennsylvania Republican and Senate Finance Chair Orrin Hatch, have suggested in recent comments that TPP agreement may still have some life in a lame duck session of the Congress this year. However, House Speaker Ryan, who controls the agenda, has already said the TPP needs fixes that will take time, and he would not add to the Brady and Hatch suggestions.
I have nothing to add more than I've already said. Nothing new to say on TPP.
The debate is central to the campaigns for president, with both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump opposing the agreement. Secretary of State John Kerry warned Congress last week that delaying a TPP vote would severely damage U.S. leadership and credibility in Asia, while losing ground to China. However, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, is not convinced. Farm groups have echoed Secretary Kerry's view that the United States cannot withdraw from the TPP, expecting to stay whole as TPP partners move on to make other trade deals without the United States. Well, here's an interesting little twist with the TPP as it relates to the Obama administration, which is moving forward as if the deal is to be implemented. Officials from the United States Trade Representative's office and other agencies have traveled to Brunei, Malaysia, Singapore, and Vietnam in recent weeks to get those countries up to speed on implementing TPP provisions on intellectual property, labor, environmental, customs, sanitary, and phytosanitary measures, along with service, financial services, and state-owned enterprises. Government officials in Vietnam, Malaysia, and other less developed countries will need some special training, they think, and an overhaul of customs procedures and other functions to comply with their obligations under the deal. And finally today, we'll come back to Washington, D.C. and legislation that's looking forward to the 2018 Farm Bill. It's not just Senator Debbie Stabenow who wants more provisions for urban agriculture in the bill, as the local food movement is driving creation of more greenhouses and produce plots within city limits. Urban ag proponents are mounting a push to press for the 2018 reauthorization of the bill to fund research, grants, and other support. They argue that resources for urban ag could serve to create jobs and provide fresh fruits and vegetables in areas that are often in need of both. Stabenow has introduced a bill that she says is a marker for the discussion via the next Farm Bill. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Illinois, across the nation, ranks number one in the production of many commodities. Corn, from time to time, Iowa usually is number one. Soybeans, about half the time. Again, we split with Iowa on that one. But there are a couple of crops where Illinois is number one and nobody is even close. Pumpkins and horseradish. Last year, I sat down with Extension horticulture specialist in those crops, Mohammed Babadous, to talk about each of them and asked him to begin with to tell me a bit about the horseradish crop in the state of Illinois.
Horseradish pretty much grown in the east St. Louis area and Collinsville area. And historically has been established there and grown very well up there. But about 50% at least of horseradish, mainly in Collinsville area.
That's for North America. How about on the planet?
In the planet in North America, Illinois is number one. And second to Illinois is Wisconsin. In the Wisconsin is just one family company. Grow roughly about 20-25% of the horseradish in North America. And the third location is in Northeast California. Northeast California used to be somewhat considerable, but a couple growers just got old and quit growing, but still number three in the horseradish production. Number four in North America is Ontario, Canada. That's the all four locations in North America.
How many acres in Illinois of horseradish?
It goes a little bit year by year. Roughly, we have about 3,000 acres of horseradish altogether in Illinois.
Yeah, so very, very few acres by comparison to other crops. Conceptually, one square mile is 640 acres.
That's
so
right.
So you get an idea really quickly that this is a very small area geographically. Is it grown in these regions for soil conditions, or is it just happenstance?
I think you can grow other places too. One grower a few years ago moved from Collinsville to Decatur, Illinois. Started horseradish, has been growing there about a couple hundred acres roughly every year. It is a particular crop and needs lots of labor and attention. It is very laborious. It is you have to have lots of time to spend on growing horseradish.
Why is that the case? What does it require?
You have to start from the beginning. Then to have a very number one horseradish, you have to lift and prune it, then bury it again, not lift completely. A couple times, some of the growers just lift from one side and strip some of the branches to make a root number one root, a bigger root and number one root. That price is almost three times higher than if you not lift. That's why is considered the
So basically, they go through in a pruning process, relatively speaking,
and
they
end up with roots.
So they take and say, all the roots that are there, I want to end up with one root because that's what I'm going to harvest, and I want it to be as big as possible.
That's right. That's what in Illinois, most of the Illinois. But if you go California, they just plant horseradish. Horseradish could be annual crop or perennial crop. You can just grow horseradish, and every year you harvest some, and then will regrow. In California, they just plant horseradish and come back harvest every other year. And they regrow, then harvest every other year. But those roots are not number one roots. In Illinois, most of the roots are number one because they have lift carefully and then prune it.
And then the pumpkin crop in the state of Illinois, the largest one, not for jack-o'-lanterns, but for processing pumpkins in the United States. If I remember correctly, 90-95% of the canned pumpkin you might find on store shelves probably originates in Illinois.
That's right. The pumpkin processing pumpkin industry started late 1920s, and with the small acreage, and it grew. It mainly started in north central Illinois in Tazewell County near Peoria, and it grew. By 1998, we had about 6,000 acres of processing pumpkins. Then suddenly a disease came, Phytophthora blight. Phytophthora blight devastated. In about 1999 and early 2000, the industry said they can't continue on. We had to work very, very hard. We were lucky and fortunate to establish some very, very good protection. And not only processing pumpkin industry did not fail, but also grew. In 2012, we reached over 16,000 acres, from 6,000 to 16,000 acres, and the highest acres. And right now, they are very stable and they grow, depends on the year, usually about 10,000 acres, 12,000 acres, 14, depends on the year and the market demand. And that's very, very good industry. And the highest value of the vegetable crop industry in Illinois. I don't want to disclose the whole price, but it is very, very pricey industry, valuable industry.
Mohamed Babadous, thank you so much for taking the time with
us. My pleasure, anytime.
We've been talking with Mohamed Babadous. He is a vegetable and fruit crop extension specialist based here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension, joined by Mark Russo. He's at Brisk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural weather. Thanks, Mark, for being with us. I do appreciate that.
Glad to be here, Todd.
Tell me a little bit about the weather forecast that we had over the weekend and what we can look forward to across the Midwest.
Yeah, well, especially across the eastern Corn Belt, we were influenced by that close low that began to move into the region last Wednesday and basically left the eastern Corn Belt here yesterday, and actually a little lingering here just from a cloud cover standpoint today. And so as a result, now we're beginning to see some open weather now for the eastern Corn Belt. The western Corn Belt, which has seen now 7-plus days of fair and dry conditions, they'll have another couple of days before some rains move into the region during the Wednesday through Friday timeframe. That's when there will be shower and thunderstorm activity across the region. So overall, as we look out ahead here, you're not going to have any kind of wide open patterns here for harvesting. But then again, there's no sign of any widespread heavy rainfall that's going to influence a significant portion of the Corn Belt. And at least in the short term, the area most favored for a bit, you know, heavier rainfall, but nothing extreme, that would be in areas of the western Corn Belt. Not in the previous wet areas, which had been northern Iowa and Minnesota, but more so into far southern Iowa into northern Missouri. That looks to be where the biggest thunderstorms that will be taking place here on Wednesday through Friday. So all in all, you know, some decent harvest progress here coming up. It's not totally wide open, but then again, it's not bogging down over one area as well.
Day and evening temperatures much more like fall and normal than they have been, especially in the month of September.
No, absolutely not here, Todd. Looks like our endless summer actually continues here, especially this week. Actually, prior to that frontal system moving through, we are going to see temperatures at warmer than normal levels. In fact, our forecast for the next 5 days calls for temperatures to average about 7 to 10 degrees above normal across the heart of the Corn Belt. There will be a little cool down closer to normal for just a couple of days, but that looks to be brief and actually warming back up again. So really no sign of any real, you know, Canadian air masses that would bring the first freeze at all to the Midwest here. So the warmth just continues here from now through mid-October.
So it's an oddity for the month of September so far, for the month of October, at least until the middle of the month. Do you see much of a change by then?
Not at this time, Todd. Even early thoughts on the end of October, we're not seeing anything out there, whether it's computer model guidance or in some of the non-model guidance that we look at, that really signals any turn to much colder conditions later on this month. So persistence is king, and we think that's going to continue to be the pattern here, you know, throughout October. And the question becomes, you know, does that last into November as well?
Thanks so much. We'll talk with you more about that next week when we get a better look at the month of November. I do appreciate it, Mark.
Yeah, my pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, and helps us wrap up this edition of the Closing Market Report.